Blog Talk Radio.
Deep from the heart of Texas, it's Soldiers of Patriotism.
You say you're not from Texas. Man, as if I couldn't tell. Well, you think you pull your boots on right and wear your hat so well. So pardon me, my laughter, as I sure do understand. Even Moses got excited when he saw the promised land. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. I was born and raised in Texas, and it means so much to me. And though my girl comes from down in Georgia, we were up in Tennessee, and as we were driving down the highway, she asked me, baby, what's so great? How come you're always going on about your long star? See, I said, that's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. All the road, and she grew small in my mirror as I watched her wave goodbye.
From Patriot Studios, my dad, Michael B.
All right, and good Sunday afternoon to you all, soldiers of patriotism. Today is Sunday, 22nd of April, 2012, and we have 198 days left until election 2012. And I want to thank you all so much for joining me today. You know, it's no small measure of one's dedication to the cause when they're willing to take time out of their day because they believe so deeply in something. In our case, it is liberty. It is conservatism. It is making sure America is and will always be the greatest country on earth. Yesterday, here in Texas, we had our senatorial conventions all across the great Lone Star State. And by the way, real quickly, let me just pause right there, my intro today. Lyle Lovett. God, you got to love Lyle Lovett and his larger band. But I had to throw a little Ozzy in there because you know what? Sometimes I feel like I'm on the crazy train. Anyway, that said, I attended my convention yesterday for Tarrant County Senatorial District 12. And I'd like to report to all y'all how it went. Some of you, my friends on Facebook, saw the post that I gave in regards to an event that occurred yesterday. But for those of you that didn't see it, I'd like to report to you about it. And it's not because I'm looking for kudos from you guys. I was honored. I was humbled at some of the responses. But I didn't post it for that reason. I posted it to make a point. So I'd like to share that with y'all. Anyway, I attended my convention yesterday, as I said, for Tarrant County Senatorial District 12. It started off as any convention would, the normal and routine business to take care of, and it looked to be a rather conventional convention. Myself, as well as many of us here in Texas, anticipated a fight with the Ron Paul supporters. But it didn't start. It started out nice and slow. Part of the reason was because Tarrant County was one of only three counties in the state of Texas that had precinct conventions this cycle. Unusual, but it was because of the fight that we're enduring with the Democrats that have tried to put an injunction on our lines being drawn. They're still not approved. It's a long story. Maybe we'll go into that another show. But it started off nice and slow. Recess came at 11 a.m., and I made my way over to Los Hermanos. I think that translates into the Brothers. It's a great little Mexican meat market with a little taqueria inside of it. Had me a couple of barbacoa tacos and a Coke. And then I drove back over to Birchman Baptist and relaxed for an hour until the convention was called back into session at 1 p.m. And I'm happy to report that my nomination as a state delegate was approved, thanks in no small measure to a very good friend of mine, Fred McCarty. After the nominations report was read, debated, which was really nothing more than adding delegates to Congressional District 12 as alternates, we moved into the resolutions. By this time, it was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, mind you, we had been there since about 8 that morning. And we had to be out of the church by 5:30 that afternoon. So what that meant was that we called a recess and we reopened our convention in the parking lot of Birchman Baptist Church. That's dedication, folks. And that did happen. But prior to that happening, when we started into the resolutions, resolution number one, which is the one I'd like to read for you now, was the one that apparently God had caused me to stay for long enough to do battle against. You see, I'm a veteran. And the resolution was this, and it had all the marks of Ron Paul all over it. Resolution number one, resolution on fighting for American values in 2012. Whereas the reverse side of the World War II Victory Medal states, freedom from fear and want, and freedom of speech and religion, thus stating the values for which Americans were fighting, and whereas in wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, freedom of speech and religion go directly against the principles of the people for whom we are fighting, against the Islamic principles of the people for whom we are fighting, thus making the United States serviceman and woman fight for principles that are in fact un-American, and whereas the cost in blood and treasure in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan outweighs the gains in security which we have achieved, and whereas war is about imposing your will on the enemy, and whereas we do not have the means to be the world's policemen, therefore be it resolved that in the future America should only fight wars that are necessary, urgent, unavoidable, without sacrificing honor, that when we choose to fight, We will fight to impose our values and will on the enemy without compromise. These values should be of necessity and include real freedoms such as embodied in our own Constitution and Bill of Rights, including freedom of religion and speech. Now, folks, on the surface, that doesn't seem to be so offensive. But to the man and woman at my convention that was a veteran, we stood in offense to this isolationist trash. Because that's what it's really about, folks. You see, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq were not wars of choice. They were wars because somebody attacked us. They were wars because for 10 years, Saddam Hussein flaunted in our face and opposed all of the sanctions against him. We set a no-fly zone. What did he continue to do? He continued to kill the Christians in the Kurdish North. We did what we had to do, not by choice. We did what we had to do because our interests were at stake. We as service members, we don't fight wars of choice. We don't. This appalls me. Ronald Reagan would be rolling over in his grave right now. We fight to protect our interests across the world. We can't be isolationists. I understand we can't be the world's policemen. Believe me, I do. And sometimes it's a very hard line that we have to look at. But there's no such thing as a war of choice. There's only wars for right and wrong. I know too many people that served that had the pleasure of seeing people vote that had never had the chance to vote in their life. That marked their fingers with blue ink. My nephews. Yeah, I served a long time ago. I'm an old veteran. I'm a crusty old ex-paratrooper. I served under the greatest president ever, Ronald Reagan. Other than Grenada, which was not much, for which my unit was a part of. I was fortunate in that respect. But I stood ready, and God knows, I would have done what I had to. So at the end of this report, and from everything I learned yesterday, I'd like to share with you, if I learned nothing else, I learned this. Grassroots activism is more than fighting for a person. It's more than pushing a message. Yes, that's important. Please don't misunderstand me. Because that's what we all do so well. Many of you, my brother Danny, who's going to be on here in just a minute, my brother Rick, my sister Teresa, my sister Becca, who's not with us today because she's off fighting in the cause of liberty and conservatism in Cincinnati. Alice Linehan, Julie McCarty, Fred McCarty, Shelley Alsmeyer, yes, even Rick Santorum. The man who we followed, and Herman Cain before him. It's more than pushing that message. Yes, it is important, but more importantly, it's getting involved in your convention. It's getting involved in your precinct. Change happens by getting on committees, nominations committee, primary organization committee, and most especially, as I learned yesterday, the Resolutions Committee. If not for several active vets yesterday, the Paulies would have pushed through a resolution that was an insult to my service, to the service of those that you love and hold dearest to you, your mothers, your fathers, your sons, your daughters, your grandparents, your brothers, your sisters, maybe yourself. I've just read to you the offensive isolationist trash that offended me so. And in tears, I stood before 300 people yesterday afternoon in the cause of traditional American values, and I won. I won with the help of those 200 or 300 patriots that agreed with me. We're not a party that takes our responsibility in this world lightly, and we're not going to be. So, with that, I want to thank you all for joining me today. Sorry for getting up on my soapbox, but I had to talk about that. Because it bothered me greatly. I want to bring in real quickly my brother from Kentucky, another patriot. And look, listen, guys, I want to say one thing. You know, we all talk about people who serve or have served as being heroes and patriots. That's not to say that people who haven't aren't. You know, I consider every single one of you, whether you served or not, I don't care. What you're doing right now is patriotic. What you've been doing with us in the cause of liberty, in the cause of conservatism, pushing that message, getting behind somebody, going to your conventions, becoming a precinct delegate, becoming a senatorial district delegate, becoming a state delegate, that's just as honorable as putting on a uniform and picking up a rifle and walking that wall or that guard post or having to do even worse. You're just as much a patriot. And I thank you all. Brother Shouse, let me get you in here real quick to speak while I take this phone call. It might be our special guest, okay?
All right.
Go ahead. The mic's yours.
Okay. And, I'm kind of disappointed how the president race has turned out, so we need to focus on getting House and Senate people elected like the next guest we're going to have on. And people listening, feel free to call in, ask some questions, and maybe get some answered, but get involved today and help us out here. And is that you, Michael?
Yep, I'm back.
Okay.
I, in fact, do have our special guest. I've got his mic on hot. It is Zach Posevich, who is running for the Republican nomination for Senate seat in Tennessee. Before I bring Zach on, I'd like to introduce you all to Zach. As I said, Zach is running for the United States Senate in the state of Tennessee. And, you know, I'm looking now at a picture of Zach and his lovely wife and his lovely daughter. I don't know much about Tennessee politics, and this is really my first opportunity. It's been such a busy weekend. I started this weekend off Friday night with a candidate who's running locally here to send down to Austin, a young fella who runs Liberty Law Center here in Fort Worth, by the name of Matthew Krause. So I've been busy with him, and then senatorial conventions yesterday fighting for what's right. And but I've been looking over Zach's stuff this morning, reading over him, and I just want to tell y'all a little bit about Zach. Zach says here that, and which no doubt Zach cherishes our country and believes that we have an obligation to restore our government to the principles that our founding fathers intended. Who can disagree with that? That's what we all fight for day in and day out. Zach is has served in the Army and has went into college and got his bachelor's degree from Tennessee Technological University. He graduated with high honors, and after graduation, he became successful in the finance, information technology, and management fields. At the age of 17, he chose to join the United States Army. Very commendable in my book. You all know how I feel about that as a veteran myself. Which, incidentally, at 17, I'm thinking that required his mom and dad's signature. Zach did a tour of duty in the Middle East. Wow. Zach, let's bring you on here. I can't thank you enough, first of all, sir, for your service in the United States Army and your willingness to step up for conservative values in Tennessee. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my honor to introduce Zach.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be on the show today. I want to make one comment that you made earlier, and that is, whether you serve in the military or not, the key is whether you have picked up and picked up our founding principles and you're fighting for them every day. And as we know that our greatest threat to our American society is apathy. And, you know, when people get frustrated with our political system, they withdraw, and tyranny is the ultimate winner, and that's their ultimate goal. And so we have to remember that it may be frustrating out there, but if we pick up those founding principles and fight for them and try to find candidates who want to really and truly get back to those principles, that's worth fighting for, because ultimately when we're in that fight, we're not only in the fight for our future, but we're in the fight to protect liberty for the next generation, because without that fight, we know that liberty will be lost forever.
Absolutely. And Zach, you were in the Middle East. I'm sorry, I was paying attention, but I don't know at what point you called in and were able to hear my intro. Did you hear the resolution that I did battle against in our senatorial district convention yesterday?
I did not. I apologize.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but essentially it's something that came from the Ron Paul folks that they slipped in on us, and I successfully won. But you were in the Middle East, Zach. Let's start off with, I hope you agree that Iraq and Afghanistan were not wars of choice. We did what we had to do as a country. And whereas this resolution would like to make us think that it was a war of choice over there, though our goal was to protect our interests, we afforded some people over there an opportunity that they've probably not known in generations. The opportunity to vote, just to start with. As a veteran, as someone who was over in the Middle East, can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, serving in the Middle East for a year, Egypt and Israel is over there with the multinational force observers, and then with the first Gulf War, I was over there for 14 or 16 months. I have to look at the calendar and count it out again. But at that time, it wasn't as luxurious because it was mostly in a tent or in a foxhole. So,
mm-hmm.
The one thing that I cringe on is when people say that we have caused all this anger against the United States and we're the result of what we're seeing. That to me is far from the truth, because we have to hold people accountable for their own actions. And, you know, what I saw when I was in the Middle East the first time, were people that were very grateful for Americans to be over there. When I was in Egypt, and met a lot of Muslims and Bedouins and the whole nine yards. But then there's the group of people that really understand what the Islamic faith is about. And, when the thing about Islam is that once you're a part of it, you know, it's like the mafia. You can't get out of it. And so it's more of a culture. People don't know how to get out of it. And so, you know, to answer your question, what I saw was multifaceted. And, when we were attacked on 9/11, we needed to have decisive action, because the only way that we can have peace, American peace in this world, is to have a strong military. What President Reagan taught us was peace through strength. But
yes, sir.
Also, that strength has to be used decisively and with precision. And, I believe that where we're at now with Syria, Egypt, you know, all these other countries, we should not be involved. In my opinion, we should not be involved in those arenas, because there's no national security interest that I'm aware of. And when asked, when the administration has been asked, what should we do about Syria, they admit there's no national interest, no national security interest. However, we just heard the other day that people are calling for action, that we should support these rebels. Well, who are the rebels? Are we going to end up with another Egypt where we have the Muslim Brotherhood, who is anti-American, anti-Israel, anti everything that we hold dear, or are we going to allow the countries? See, when America jumps into a battle, then we are saying that that country no longer has sovereignty. And when we jump into these battles, what that does to American sovereignty is it's hurt us as well. It threatens our national sovereignty because we're broke. And we don't have the money to be spending on these extracurricular activities unless they are a for sure threat to our national security and it's a war that's been declared by Congress.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, and when I was over, you know, in the first Gulf War, I thought it was very ironic that I was being sent over there to protect Kuwait's border when we don't protect our own borders.
Well, and that's a great segue into my next question for you and something I'd like you to elaborate on. But real quickly, I just want to say, whereas you're absolutely right with Syria and Egypt and whatnot, it is a very hard needle to thread. And however, you take, for instance, some place like Iran, I think you would agree, we can't let them go nuclear. I mean, that's not in our best national interests.
No, we can't let them go nuclear, but we should never put boots on the ground. Our technology and our ability to react in this day and age is so tremendous that, like I was saying earlier, peace through strength, and that comes when you act decisively and your enemy knows that you're going to act. Right now the world doesn't know how the United States is going to act.
Exactly.
And so that's why everybody's becoming more and more emboldened to do these various things. We have to act to protect our national security and protect the American people from an immediate, a threat. But we shouldn't be putting boots on the ground. It needs to be a war that's declared by Congress, and then war, as Winston Churchill said, war is hell, and we need to get in there and get out. You know, this Afghanistan, I think most people would agree we have spent way too long in Afghanistan and Iraq, and that's because we're not treating we call them conflicts or we call them by different names, but if we're going to be there, let's call it a war, let's get in there, let's get the job done and bring everybody back home, because all it is doing is it's costing the American people more and more money. It's costing our soldiers, their lives and their families are being impacted, and we could have done this much differently. I agree that we needed to go into Afghanistan because they attacked us, but I believe we should have went in there decisively, took out square miles, and been done with it. And said, look, you mess with us, and we're coming for you, and we're not going to stop until everybody is gone. And if you are not going to help us, then, you know, we're so worried about collateral damage these days. Well, the fact of the matter is this. You can look at a country's rulers, the people leading the country, and it is representative of the citizens in that country, just like in the United States. You can look at our government, well, it's reflective of the people. It's either we become apathetic and we don't care, or that is truly how we all believe. So we have to get it back, you know, before our country gets out of control. And the only way to do that is get the people to rise up and to say enough is enough. We're taking our liberty back. The federal government was designed to have limited power, not limitless power.
Well, and let's go into that, the segue that you opened up for a sec, which is your stance on no tolerance for illegal immigration. I'm a border state, so obviously illegal immigration is something that affects me drastically, as it does most of the South, in fact. Most people don't realize this, but you don't have to be a southern state to be impacted by illegal immigration. I've spent 6 years at Fort Bragg out in North Carolina. And there is I don't know a good word for it, but I guess bands of of immigrants that just move up and down the southeastern states there, doing farm work. I know Tennessee probably has the same thing. I know we had an issue here some years back with our Governor Perry, who was for the transcontinental highway. The name escapes me right off the top of my head, but he wanted to basically build the superhighway from Mexico up through the middle of Texas, up through the states for trade reasons. Not a good idea. It didn't work out too well for us, and it ultimately got pushed back. Tell us a little bit about your stance on immigration, where you see we can strengthen our borders from Texas over to California, what your ideas are on the existing problem we have currently with folks in the states that are illegal, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, again, I believe with the advancements we've made in technology that there's no reason why we cannot secure our borders, and immigration is more than just the land borders. We have to look at our seaports and make sure that they're secure. Ultimately, the goal is to protect the American citizen. If we don't have secure borders, then we're allowing people to come in to filter in that we know want to harm and kill us. So, you know, we've all read the stories about the drones that our military now has 30,000 drones that are flying around in the United States. Well, those drones, instead of spying on American people, they need to be on the border. And I believe I did read an article that the other day, maybe a week or so ago, that they are going to dispatch some of those drones to the border. Well, that's good news, because then they can monitor that border and send in the Border Patrol or send in troops or whatever is needed based on what the drones are picking up from the border activity.
You know, Zach, not to get into I don't want to get into a discussion. This is about you, but in this conversation, I'm a History Channel buff, and I happened to be watching a show the other day on Area 51. I don't know why, because I don't buy into all of that stuff. But what I found interesting in regards to this conversation was the amount of technology they have around Area 51, motion sensors, the like. Spotters from the couple of mountains there that are about 12 miles outside of Area 51. Where I'm going with this, Zach, is and it kind of goes to that electronic fence idea, I guess is where I'm going with this. The technology that they have in place around what they call Area 51 is so advanced that they say they can practically smell you when you're 20 miles outside of Area 51. This is the kind of technology I think we need to bring to the border. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I think what it demonstrates is a lack of a will by our elected officials to secure the borders. There's nobody that can make an argument against our ability not to secure it when we can send a man to the moon. When we can do all these other things, but for some reason we can't close down a border and make sure that nobody that's coming into our country that wants to hurt us. It just doesn't make sense. And the problem is that a lot of us have gotten into the habit of listening to the pundits and then not even using the God-given talents that we have and basic logic. You know, and analysis and saying, does that even make sense? So I agree. I think a lot of a combination of technology and then, of course, you know, once you have a violation, a security violation, then how do you dispatch the appropriate people to deal with that? And dispatching in this country has a long history, whether you're talking about fire, police, military, you know, so we know how to do that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree with you.
Here's just a little example. I woke up early this morning about 7 o'clock, and I really wanted to sleep in. So I turned on Fox and Friends before switching over to Fox News with Chris Wallace this morning. And they were interviewing a lawyer down in Alabama, our sister state down there, the grand, Bama, the grand state of the South. Apparently, there's a gentleman jailed down there that has been arrested 36 different times for different drug violations and the like. That is an illegal immigrant that they cannot, because of Obama rules. And this is God is my witness right now, Zach. They cannot deport this man. There's a problem with this. There's a problem when we have, first of all, forget 36 times. The first time that you get arrested and you are a known illegal immigrant, why you are not deported immediately? Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Yet this person has been arrested on 36 different occasions. It's incredible.
It just shows the lack of common sense. You know, we were talking earlier about peace through strength. Well, that only works if you're decisive in your action. You can have the best military, but if you don't act or act consistently, or people know where you're headed, then you're not going to have peace. And same thing with our laws. America was great because America was good, because we had law, order, and justice. And with the political correctness, which changes our language and promotes tolerance as a good versus the evil that it is, we get into situations where you cannot even control your border, because for some reason you can't enforce the law of the land. That's why all these states are now looking at, okay, the federal government was meant to be limited. They're out of control. So states now are looking at how to nullify, which is a constitutional term, how to nullify federal laws that interfere with state actions. When we have illegal aliens that are coming into our country, whatever state they hit, it impacts that state's economy. Most of the time, people just think about the unemployment, that illegal aliens take jobs that Americans would be available to Americans. And then we hear all this story about, well, those are jobs Americans won't do. Well, put that argument aside. The other thing that it does is it strips resources away from those citizens, resources that for health care. We know that we have a health care crisis in this country because the government is controlling it, whether it be Medicaid, Medicare, or various states, have child health care and whatnot. And those services are being stripped by these illegal aliens that should be available to the citizens that are paying for those services. And that's the story that we don't hear about. So let's just take the argument that there's, I forget the latest number, but 23 million illegal aliens. Is that number sound about right?
That sounds about right. Yeah, I think it was around 10 or 11 million during the 80s, and it's more than doubled since then.
Yeah, so you figure out the services that they are consuming that are meant for U.S. citizens, and you begin to understand that we have, while we have a budget deficits, and while most states are having bankruptcy discussions, how are they going to pay their bonds back? How are they going to fund the government the next year? And taxes are never the answer, because taxes don't solve the problem, which is spending. And, when government does things that it's not meant to do, things get out of control quite rapidly.
Yeah, you said something interesting there. It kind of took me back to something Margaret Thatcher used to say: you can only spend so much of other people's money.
Right.
You know, eventually it's going to run out, right, Zach? Hey, listen, being from Tennessee, and I'm not very familiar with the natural resources other than, you know, agriculture in Tennessee, but I live here in Tarrant County. I can look out my window and I can see a rig in the horizon. We sit on top of the Barnett Shale. Clean green gas. Fracking doesn't bother me one bit. We have it down to a T here in Texas. Obama administration would like to make people think otherwise. So I'm looking at here, you got real energy independence and affordability. So let's touch a little bit on where you think we need to go. I'm assuming that you're an all of the above kind of guy. We need everything. I don't buy much into the wind energy thing, but if it makes people happy, we put a few windmills out in West Texas, fine, we'll do it. I'm a drill baby drill kind of guy. But tell us a little bit about your thoughts on real energy independence and affordability, and also how do you see that works into our national defense, because I think energy is a national security interest issue.
Yeah, and that's I mean, this is a key, hopefully this is a key point for this election, because it definitely is. And, you know, as I go around Tennessee speaking to various groups, I ask them if anyone in the group can recall when America became energy independent. And I get kind of this, glossy-eyed look, and then people catch on and they start laughing. Well, the answer is we haven't, right? But we have a energy department that is over 30 years old, and all it does is consume resources from the taxpayers. So number one is, I'm above all, everything we should look at, everything, but the most important thing we should do is let the free market decide. Because when government gets involved and says, hey, we're going to do Solyndra, who is the ultimate loser? The taxpayer. Who is the ultimate winner? The cronies who make the deal and the politicians who got the kickbacks. So government should be involved in what energy sources are or are not available. They should be getting out of the way, and they should be looking at, okay, our most of our, just like what they did in the 70s, right, when they most of the vehicles had, you know, just used gas. Well, they, you know, during the crisis, they kind of switched where the vehicles could use a blend of gas that the military could get, right, because it was more plentiful and allowed them greater flexibility. So you let the free market take control, and then what you do from a national security perspective is you make your moves based on what the free market is doing. You don't say, well, our national defense is in solar, so we're going to go promote a bunch of solar wind. Or we're going to do, we're going to do solar, so we're going to buy all these solar farms, and then we're going to do wind and have these wind farms. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because number one, it's going to be more costly because the free market hasn't tweaked it yet. And they haven't tweaked it yet because it's not a viable solution, and they haven't got the cost down. So ultimately, where the national security, if it was taken in that direction, would ultimately cost the taxpayers more, and therefore resources would be taken away from other things in order to provide just basic energy versus being able to spend money on building ships and planes and arsenal to make sure that we had appropriate inventories of various military items. Where all that would be diverted to just supporting our energy. So I think the key here is for the government to get out of it. Government, there's no constitutional authority for the government to be in it.
Well, and that's a great segue into the next thing I want to ask you. But before I do that, Zach, I just want to say for those folks that might have just joined us, we have Zach Poskovich, who's running for U.S. Senator in the state, the great state of Tennessee. I have a lot of ancestors that immigrated to Texas from Tennessee back in the 1830s. So Tennessee, you might say, is kind of a home in my background to me. You can find Zach at www.zachforsenate.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/Zach for Senate. Zach has been kind enough to spend some time with us this afternoon. And folks, if you didn't catch it, what we were just talking about, I think is worth $50 to the Zach for Senate campaign funds. He's a free market guy, and he's definitely a conservative that is doing battle in the same battle that all of us have been doing since last summer. Zach, with that, let's go into states' rights. Tell us a little bit, and that covers abroad. I know that's a broad brush, but we've got health care, to me isn't even states' rights. And this kind of touches a little bit. I'm looking at your Zach for Senate Facebook site, and there's a couple of questions there. And I don't want to put you on the spot. So rather than ask the questions I'm seeing on here, I would like for you to maybe just talk about the different candidates that have been running for the President of the United States and where some basic thoughts on them. I don't want you to go into detail on that. But I'm asking in reference to states' rights, especially where the health care mandate is, because, and with all due respect to Governor Romney, and I'm not ashamed of this, Zach, I am a hardcore conservative. I'm a hardcore Rick Santorum supporter. I'm a delegate to my state now, and my vote, primary vote and my delegate vote will still go to Rick Santorum. As far as I'm concerned, there's only been two people in the history of the United States that have posed a socialist health care mandate on us, and that's been Governor Romney and President Obama. With that said, I will vote for Romney if he's our nominee in November. So where states' rights is concerned, can you please talk to us a little bit to that?
Sure. This is another key issue. In Tennessee, our state legislatures have been working on a bill, a nullification bill, where they would look at laws being passed by our federal government, and if it was identified as unconstitutional, that the Constitution didn't provide that authority to the federal government, then that bill would be nullified, and the state of Tennessee would therefore protect its citizens from the federal government. We have to remember that the Constitution is an agreement, is a contract between the people. Remember, the preamble says, we the people. So how could the people create a contract between ourselves? We could do that because each of us are the sole possessors of our individual liberty. You see, what makes America different than any other nation is that we are the possessors of our individual liberty. We saw two dictators that were taken out of office, Gaddafi and Mubarak. Well, when they ruled their countries, their citizens had freedoms. So it's more than freedom. The question is, what freedom did they enjoy, and who put the limits on their freedom? Well, the dictator did. Mubarak or Gaddafi. And why or how could they do that? Because they were the sole possessor of their liberty. And so in America, we have our uniqueness, and so we got together and we knew that as a civilization that we needed a form of government that would do certain things for us. And things that individually, we couldn't do for ourselves. So we created this Constitution after many lessons with the Mayflower Compact up through the Articles of Confederation, and then finally saying, okay, well, with the Constitution, we need a federal government, but this federal government needs to have limited powers. And as identified in the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, anything that's not listed here is left to the states or the individual, respectively. So as individuals owning our liberty, we got together and we said, here's what we're going to do, allow the federal government to do. And we're doing that because we have that authority to give those limited powers away. So that's, the Constitution is that agreement. And so we have to remember that in that context, because it applies to how we look at state rights. You see, because the 10th Amendment said that that those powers not enumerated are left to the states or the individuals. So now, what are those things? Well, healthcare. Healthcare is a key one. It's not mentioned in the Constitution. Our politicians like to find ways around the Constitution in order to shoehorn their ideas in versus looking at the original intent of the Constitution. And you have to read about our founding fathers and their bibliographies and in their own words what they were trying to accomplish. You can read the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, but at the end of the day, what was the problem that they were trying to solve? So state rights is a huge point of discussion, and it will be a, no matter how 2012 turns out, state rights is going to be a huge issue. And if we do not make the gains necessary in order to turn our ship around, so to speak, and begin to reclaim some of the liberty that we have lost, I believe we will see states rise up against the federal government using their 10th Amendment rights. Now, a lot of people begin to equate this to what happened during the Civil War, but it's much, much, much different than what was happening during the Civil War.
Absolutely. Well, and with that, speaking of states' rights, okay, what I'd like to kind of direct now, Zach, if it's okay with you, sir, is you're on your platform limiting federal powers as prescribed in the Constitution. I'd like to hear a little bit about that. And then from that, I'd like to go into the right to keep and bear arms, which I'd like to bring Danny, my brother Danny Schaus from Kentucky, up on deck. Danny, be thinking about a question for the right to keep and bear arms. I got a few phone calls. Zach, I do apologize. My co-host that's normally on with me today is very heavily involved in a conservative political action. This is a great story. We won't go into it now, but she's busy in Cincinnati. And so I got a few phone calls that I need to answer real quick that are on standby and just let them know that I know they're waiting. So if you could speak to your issue on limiting federal powers and prescribed in the Constitution. And then, Danny, if you could my go-to guy on the Second Amendment. Danny, if you could be prepared to speak to Brother Zach here on the right to keep and bear arms, I'd appreciate it, gentlemen.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jack.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, limiting the federal government requires not only the states making their case and standing and using the Constitution as a guide, but it requires that the individuals make a stand too, because we've all heard the saying, the cliche, when good men do nothing, evil flourishes. And silence, sitting silent, is taking a stand. And in most cases, that stand is for evil and not good. So, you know, the only thing that I can add to my other comments is this. The states, in order to put the controls on the federal government, are going to have to rise up and confront the federal government. We talked earlier in the conversation about in Alabama, a immigrant, illegal alien was captured, 36 offenses, but yet the federal government is failing to do their job, which makes Alabama, puts them in a precarious situation because they have an illegal alien that they can do nothing with. And if they release him, then that could be somebody, could be raped, murdered, or another incident caused. So that's why states are going to rise up against the federal government and say, look, according to the Constitution, here is your limited powers, and we are going to put you back in that box. And what we have to understand as citizens is that's not the states trying to take control. That's the states abiding by the Constitution. And as citizens, we need to review the Constitution consistently and constantly and try to understand what our founding fathers' intent was, because that's why those provisions were put there, so the federal government would not step outside the bounds. And if they did, the citizens and the states could put the federal government back in their bounds.
Okay. And so where do you stand on the Second Amendment?
Yeah, the Second Amendment is, you know, again, going back to what our founding fathers' intent was, the Second Amendment of the Bill of Rights was a critical piece to ensure that the citizens had the ability to rise up against a tyrannical government. Now, the important thing here is not to overthrow a constitutional government, but to overthrow a tyrannical government to get back to a constitutional government. So when the citizens rise up, they're not rising up against the Constitution. They're rising up against the tyrannical government who is no longer abiding by the Constitution. That's why the Second Amendment is most critical, because it provides the citizens with the means necessary in order to put the government in check. Thomas Jefferson said, when asked, how do you tell tyranny from liberty? And he said, well, when the people fear the government, that's tyranny. But when the government fears the people, that's liberty. And I would ask, as I do ask, citizens around Tennessee, do you fear the government or do you think the government fears you? 9 out of 10 times they tell me that they fear the government, and that is tyranny, and that's where we're headed. So the Second Amendment right we have to take most precious, because without it, we have no defenses to our government. You know, we know that gun control only impacts the law-abiding citizens, because criminals will always have the weapons. So when you have gun control, you take the weapons away from your law-abiding citizens, because your criminals will have them anyway. And that's why that's one of the reasons why I'm in this race. My opponent, the incumbent in the seat, Bob Corker, voted to confirm Jesse Furman against the NRA, against the GLA, the Gun Owners of America, against the recommendations. Now, here's an important fact, and if anybody is listening to this, your audience, and they are NRA members, I encourage them to call NRA tomorrow, because here's what they told me. I had talked to them when I entered the race and asked them if they would reconsider endorsing Bob Corker. And, of course, they said, well, he's got a pretty good record and he's the incumbent, so we're not going to change our endorsement. And I said, but look, anytime a elected official will compromise one piece of the Constitution, it is only a matter of time until they come for the piece that is most critical to you. And I said, NRA, it is only a matter of time before Bob Corker comes for the Second Amendment. And we agreed to disagree. Well, a couple of weeks ago, or actually it's been probably about 6 weeks ago, Bob Corker voted to confirm Jesse Furman to the federal bench. So I called the NRA up again and I said, are you ready to talk? I said, today is the day, as I told you, Bob Corker came for the Second Amendment. They said, what are you talking about? I said, well, he voted to confirm Jesse Furman to the federal bench. They said, well, Zach, I hate to tell you this, but we don't count that vote against Bob Corker. And so this is what's wrong with America. We have organizations like the NRA, which I'm a member of, but I'm not going to be a member long because I'm canceling my membership, because when the American people support organizations that set up arbitrary rules and set up a filtering system on their scoring, that's when we lose, because there are millions of Americans that look to the NRA to get a sense of where elected officials are on the Second Amendment. And when they do not count every vote, then they're not giving the American citizens a clear indication of how that person votes on the Second Amendment. Would you not agree?
I agree with that.
And absolutely.
I'm a life member of the NRA, so.
So I would call them. I told them, I said, I'm going to, as I travel the state and as I talk to reporters and radio and TV, I am going to tell everybody to call you and complain about this, because it either needs to be fixed or people need to start canceling their memberships. And unfortunately, some of these organizations only know and act according to, you know, what hits them in the pocketbook.
Okay.
It doesn't at all. Doesn't us at all, Brother Shouse. Well, Zach, this has been such an honor to have you on the show from Tennessee. You're doing God's work, and you're a patriot, and you should be commended. What I'd like to promise you, sir, is I will be your mouthpiece. I'm a message pusher. That's what I've done for Senator Santorum. That's what I did for Mr. Herman Cain prior to that. That's what I'm doing for the folks that I'm supporting down here in Texas, Ted Cruz and Matthew Krause in my state house district. I'd like to give you a few minutes just to close up. I've got your counterpart in Connecticut, another person that we conservatives are looking to fill a seat up there. That's Brian Cahill, who's on standby. He's on deck, and you're welcome to stick around. Maybe we can bring Brian on, and maybe after I give Brian the floor and we talk to Brian a little bit, we could have two of the next up-and-coming stars in the U.S. Senate to be on the show at one time. This is a major landmark for Soldiers of Patriotism. I can't thank you enough. But go ahead and take a few minutes. Again, folks, this is Zach Poskovich. You can find him on Facebook at facebook.com, Zach for Senate, as well as zachforsenate.com. These are good people, folks. These are people that are pushing the agenda that we need pushed. And whoever our president is, well, let me just say this, and I'm not speaking on behalf of Zach, so please, I don't want anybody to infer that. If our nominee is president or is Governor Romney, and that's who should be in the White House, we need people like Zach and the man that I've got coming up next to hold his feet to the fire, because all of us I know don't trust him. Zach, with that, please take a chance to close up and stick around if you can, sir. Oh, and by the way, tell us about your thing tomorrow. I know that you're doing you've got something going on tomorrow. You're doing a bus tour or something to that effect.
Yeah, well, actually, it's the 25th, 26th, and 27th. We are beginning our district tours. And in the state of Tennessee, there's 9 congressional districts. So tomorrow, or Wednesday, we will start our 7th congressional district tour, which we'll be touring that district in 3 days, and we'll cover 19 counties. But in closing, let me say that, the reason why I'm running is because, like many Americans, we are all frustrated with electing somebody who we thought was on our side, who we thought was fighting our fight. They get to Washington, and all they do is capitulate, or they even do worse, they turn against us. And so I'm running to bring not just a fight here in Tennessee, but bring this fight for liberty to Washington, D.C., and give a voice back to the residents of Tennessee. We have to be very careful, and when we say all we need is a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Republican president, and all of our worries will be over. Well, we know that that's far from the truth, because we can look at just as recent as a few years ago when that was the case, and what we saw was a consistent move to bigger government, more debt, more deficits. So what we have to do is say our loyalty lies with the Constitution of the United States of America. That is our document because it is built on the premise that our rights are endowed upon us by our Creator, which was defined in the Declaration of Independence. So we have to remember that we have to look at the person running, and because I get asked every day, well, Zach, why are you running against a Republican? We have to make sure we get four more so we can have a majority. And you might ruin that. Well, folks, we have to start relying back on the Almighty God and less on ourselves, which means we need to promote the right things and start choosing the wrong things. Because if we, the voters, cannot demonstrate courage in our elections, how can we demand our elected officials demonstrate courage when they're voting on bills?
Absolutely.
So I say, always stand for right, never stand for wrong.
Absolutely. And, Zach, I'm sorry, just one more thing. And, Brian, I've got you on a live mic, Mr. Cahill. Mr. Hill, please stand by, but I've got you on a live mic. I forgot, excuse me, it's been a very busy week for us here in Texas, as both of you gentlemen, I sure are very aware. If not for my buddies Teresa Bresky and Becca Lauer, I would have been totally lost today. But anyway, real quickly, Zach, before you go, I have an individual that wants to ask you one question, if that's okay with you. His name is John Silverman. John, can you please make it quick? I have another candidate that's standing by after Zach.
Okay. How you doing, Zach? I really just wanted to ask you, how do you feel about foreign aid distributions? Because, I mean, historically thinking, our foreign aid that we have sent around the world, especially in Iraq, I mean, for 20 years, our foreign aid went to, you know, Saddam Hussein for 20 years. And then we go and have a war with them, and then we put sanctions on Iraq, which result in 1.2 million civilian deaths due to starvation. Do you think that foreign aid causes any kind of, you know, retaliation? Or even if it doesn't, do you think that, you know, it's a socialist policy that takes tax dollars from my pocket and puts it into God knows who's getting it in these other countries?
Thank you, John. Very good question. Zach, I'm gonna put you on mute. Zach, John, Zach, good question. Can you give us an answer to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the foreign aid, in looking at the Constitution, I think it's I don't find any powers listed in the Constitution for the federal government to be given taxpayer dollars to foreign nations. So that part I would agree with. I do not believe that our actions are causing retaliation from other nations. But I would agree that we need to, you know, we're broke, number one. Number two is if somebody can find it in the Constitution to identify where the federal government would have that authority, then I would look at it. But as I know the Constitution and have reviewed it up until this point, I find no constitutional authority for the federal government to give other nations taxpayer money.
You're a patriot, Zach. Stand by. I'd like to bring in real quick here and just give you an opportunity to say hi to your counterpart up in Connecticut. From BrianCahill.com, he's running for Senator Lieberman's seat. I'd like to bring on now the man that's running for the U.S. Senate in Connecticut, Brian Cahill. Mr. Hill, thank you so much. I've got Zach Poskovich, who's running as your counterpart down in Tennessee. Hopefully we can get both of you guys in the Senate to do God's work. Brian, Zach, y'all take a minute. And, Zach, I want to thank you. And, Brian, the floor would be yours.
Thanks, Mike, and it's good to meet you, Zach. I heard part of your presentation, and I agree with a lot of things you said. So it's good that we're connecting all around the United States, the candidates for Congress, because we do need to take back this Congress and take back this Senate in particular, because, as Mike was saying, it really doesn't matter who the president is. If we got that Senate, we have a check and balance on the president. I'm hoping Romney gets in there. But if he doesn't get in there, then if we have the Senate, then we can still do a lot and hold on to the House. So it's good to see a lot of like-minded people around the country running for office, because I'm running for the same reason that Zach was saying. I'm just fed up with the nonsense as people get in office. They make all these campaign promises, and they're not delivering on these promises. In fact, they're doing just the opposite. And it seems like we have a Congress that is working against the American people instead of working for the American people. And it's about time we get some new people in office, get some fresh blood in there, and start moving this country forward, because we're moving in the wrong direction, and we got to turn this ship around. So I'm happy to know you guys, and it's good to be here.
Well, Brian, thank you. I've got many questions for you. Zach, did you want to hang on? First of all, take a few minutes with Brian, and then did you want to hang tight? I'll just leave you there. You can hang up at your convenience. I did schedule a 3-hour show today, so we've got plenty of time. So it's up to you, my friend.
Yeah, I have some time I can stay on. Don't want to take any limelight away from Brian. But I've looked at Brian's website very early on, and I was excited to see someone from Connecticut that had similar views from somebody from Tennessee. So that state with Senator Lieberman, you know, I thought, man, this is great to see someone that's running against an incumbent that is just rooted in the Senate, you know, and that's why. Let me just make one thing, and I'll jump in when asked. Again, I don't want to take anything away from Brian, but you know, the original intent of the Constitution was not to have these lifelong appointments, so to speak. We call election these days of these good old boy senators. You know, it was meant to be. The state legislatures would elect the senators, and they would serve as long as they were protecting the state rights. And we no longer have that. Can you imagine the difference in the makeup of the Senate if, when they passed a budget — well, the Senate hasn't in over 3 years, but if, let's just assume when they did pass a budget, and that portion of the budget was handed down to the state, and the state legislatures had to pick up that and say, you mean what? We have to raise what kind of money? And see, it used to be the state legislatures had to figure out how to raise that money. If they had to do that today, we would have a much different makeup in the United States Senate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Zach, stand by. I'm going to leave your mic on hot real quick. I'd like to, Mr. Hill, I'd like to take an opportunity to introduce you real quick. I've got Brian K. Hill on. It's briankhill.com. For you that are listening, I strongly recommend that you go to his website and pull it up right now as we're speaking with Mr. Hill. Brian, and I'm just as I was with Zach, I'm in awe. I'm a veteran. You guys are my band of brothers, and I love you both, and thank you for your service. Brian has been a member of the United States Army and the Navy, both, actually. He's been a soldier and a squid. I love that. And an advocate for workers, families, and employers in Connecticut. This is an amazing story, folks. For 12 years, Brian has served active duty military judge advocate. That's JAG for you folks that are not that familiar since 9/11. He apparently was an officer. Are you an attorney, Brian?
I am an attorney, graduate of Howard Law School in Washington, D.C., and
I started active
duty in 1998 with the Navy, and I was on active duty for 12 straight years. I got off of active duty in 2010 as a major. I did switch from the Navy to the Army active duty and became an active duty Army judge advocate. So I've been deployed around the world, as you might imagine. I've lived overseas. I've been stationed overseas. I lived in 8 or 9 different states, practiced a variety of fields of law, including being an international law attorney, a federal contract and fiscal law attorney, a prosecuting attorney, an administrative law attorney. I've been a staff judge advocate, which is like an in-house attorney for a base or a command, and I've done it for both. So I got a pretty diverse legal background. I got off of active duty, started my own law firm in the capital of Connecticut, which is the Hartford, Connecticut. And it's a general law practice where we help families and small businesses navigate this bureaucratic maze. We
we have here in the state of Connecticut. I did want to clarify one thing. My website is www.brian, B-R-I-A-N, the letter K, for my middle initial, hill.com, www.briancahill.com. It's not Brian Cahill with a C. C-A-H-I-L-L.
And it's a good thing you clarified me, Brian, because, you know, I'm a Texan, and I speak quickly, and I speak with a twang. So, and you're absolutely right. It probably did sound like I was saying Cahill as opposed to the letter K and then Hill. So thank you for doing that. Brian, you know what? You would do a much better job of introducing yourself. First of all, thank you so much for your service. I'm a veteran from 82 to 88, 82nd Airborne Division down in Fort Bragg. Served under our greatest president. I'm a little bit of an old guy. Did battle yesterday at my senatorial convention against the Paulies, who wanted to impose some isolationist trash on us. I can't thank you enough for what you've done. In looking at your website and looking over your biography, I've got to ask the very first thing I have to ask, and then I want to give the floor to you. I want to ask this because for so much of my life, as a conservative Republican, I get accused of being a racist all the time when nothing could be further from the truth. What brought you into the Republican Party? Tell us a little bit about your life story, please, Brian. This has to be very intriguing and interesting.
Well, I've actually been a lifelong Republican, and when I registered in high school, I registered as Republican.
Awesome.
So I've never been registered with any other political party before. I have been registered unaffiliated with any party for 2 years, but I've never been registered with another party other than the Republicans. And I grew up in a conservative, politically conservative, but a conservative family, and I think most people are conservative.
Yes, sir.
Just by nature, they're conservative. And Connecticut is a conservative state. We tend to vote Democrat for our statewide election, but most people don't realize that Connecticut has 169 towns. Of that 169 towns, 105 of them are controlled by Republicans, either via the chief executive officer, i.e. the mayor or the first electman, or they have a Republican-controlled town council. Yet Connecticut has the perception of being a blue state when, in fact, if you look at who controls what, the Republicans control more towns than the Democrats. The Democrats control our city. And the key to winning statewide election is to do better in the cities. Right now we don't hold... We have 5 congressional districts in the state of Connecticut, and the Republicans do not hold any of those federal seats. Neither do we hold the governor's office. We lost the governor's house in 2010. Prior to that, we held it for about 12 years straight, but we lost it in 2010. So now we don't have any statewide offices. We don't control any statewide offices, but we control a majority of the towns in the state of Connecticut. Again, I grew up in Connecticut. I was born and raised here, graduate of one of the state universities, Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven, where Yale is also located. My parents taught us the value and ethics. They taught us a good work ethic and how to be self-sufficient and independent. And I think that's missing in society today, where we don't really teach our kids to be independent anymore. In fact, we have, in my opinion, an entitlement mentality that is settling in on our citizens, especially our youth. And by that, I mean there's too many people out there who just expect something for nothing. There's too many people out there who expect others to do for them what they should be doing for themselves. There's too many people out there who have grown too comfortable living off the generosity and or sympathy of others. And quite frankly, we've gotten to a point where success and independence is penalized, and failure and dependency is being rewarded. And we've gone topsy-turvy in this country. We've got too many people becoming dependent upon government, and we have the Democrats in office promoting these policies, which are promoting dependency upon government. They're enacting policies that are getting people dependent upon government. Why? Because they want people to keep voting for them. And it seems to be working in our cities, where it's predominantly Democrat in the city, and they keep voting for the Democrats, and right before their eyes, their cities are deteriorating, and yet they keep voting for these Democrats. It really makes no sense, and but it's hard to educate voters that the very thing that they very people that they think are helping them, the Democrats, are actually hurting them. So that's the message that I'm bringing to the cities. Again, the key to winning statewide election in Connecticut is to do better in the cities, and I understand that. And so I'm trying to preach a message of empowerment over entitlement, empowerment over entitlement. If we could teach a city resident, especially in our inner city, how to be self-sufficient and take care of their own communities and not have to rely on somebody doing something for them. Because if you think about it, it's really patronizing. Because, these folks are just as smart as anyone else. They don't need the Democrats telling them how to take care of their family. They don't need the Democrats telling them how to take care of their community. It's patronizing because the Democrats are basically saying, you're not smart enough to take care of yourself. You're not smart enough to take care of your own communities. Well, I reject that notion. They are smart enough.
Yes, sir.
We ought to give them the tools to empower themselves to take care of their own communities and take care of their own families and give them a stake in the game. Because if you don't have a stake in the game, you don't really care. And right now, a lot of people just don't have a stake in the game, and it's evident by their actions. And so I'm doing my best to educate and re-educate, re-indoctrinate, recondition the minds of people who have are being taken for granted by the Democrats, and I'm just fed up with it myself. Because in our inner cities, you have children in schools that look like prisons, and prisons full of kids who should be in school. It's just getting to a point where it's just getting ridiculous.
Well, I'm going to get to make an analogy to what you're saying, Brian. I have four kids. My oldest is 28, and I have a 1-year-old granddaughter. But then, by a second wife who's much younger than me, I have three children, and I'm fast approaching 50. I have three children. My oldest boy is 11. I have a daughter then that's 9, and then I have a son that's 6. So I have three young children. Right. And we went downtown last night to the Main Street Arts Festival here in Fort Worth, and I got to tell you, it's unpleasant going anywhere with my children, not because I don't love them, but because they want everything. It's want.
Yeah,
want.
Yeah.
Getting this, getting that. Exactly. And what you're saying, and this is not, folks, this isn't about race. This is beyond race. Maybe it's about your economic position in life. But you're absolutely right, Brian. The problem is that the Democrats, as I see it, okay, and if I'm wrong, I stand corrected, sir. The Democrats want to hold down society. I think by holding down society, they gain their power base. If you keep someone dependent upon you, you keep getting their vote. It's a very hard thing in life to pick yourself up by your bootstraps, as you have done, Brian, and as Zach has done, and Brother Shouson, all of us, to pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and to make something of our lives and to say, you know what, I'm not going to be satisfied with the $21,000 a year that the government will give me to survive. I want the opportunity to do better. And we've been bamboozled, and unfortunately so many good people. I was a Boy Scout leader on the west side of Fort Worth, which is an economically diverse area of town.
Yeah, I know exactly where it is. I didn't tell you that I used to live in Fort Worth. I was stationed there.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
I also live in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Then you know exactly the area of town I'm speaking of. And it's a middle-income side of town. One side of Camp Bowie is that middle-income bracket that busts cojones every day for what they make, and the other side of Camp Bowie are those folks that are dependent upon welfare and food stamps.
Right. And
it's, they're good people. So many people I would have come, and I'm the people say you're a conservative, you must be a mean person, when in fact the opposite is true. I cried yesterday standing up in my senatorial convention, speaking up for us vets and for our brothers and sisters in arms. I cry when I sing the national anthem or say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes.
And, you know, so many people would come to my Cub Scout troop or to my Cub Scout pack, and they would say, Michael, we don't have the money to buy our son a uniform. And I would go down to the Boy Scout shack, and I would either find a uniform for them, I would find someone to donate it, or I would buy it.
Right.
And I'm not bragging. This is not about bragging.
Right, right.
It's just, I would go and buy that kid a uniform or a book or whatever they needed. My wife and I, my wife's a second grade school teacher on the south side of Fort Worth, because she chooses to be, because she chooses to teach those young children whose most of their family don't even speak English. She
yeah.
chooses that. And every year, you know, we do what we can to buy those kids school supplies. It's because we care. And there's a line to where we care, but what we see is these people have been trapped, Brian. They've
yeah.
been trapped by a system, and they don't understand, or they've seemed to have forgotten how to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and see that there's something greater if they go out and work for it than if it's given to them. How do
right,
we change
right.
that, Brian?
It's difficult. We've got to get rid of these Democrats, for one. You know, there's an adage that says if you feed a person a fish, you fed them for a day. But if you teach them how to fish, you fed them for a lifetime. The Democrats are very good at feeding people. But the Republicans want to teach people to be self-sufficient, how to fish for themselves so that they don't have to rely on somebody feeding them. And I think that's the biggest difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. But there's a lot to be done. I mean, people have gotten like this through years of conditioning, and it's going to take years of reconditioning their mind. But you're right. They're given barely enough to exist. Barely enough to exist. They're not getting ahead, and they're not necessarily dying, but they're just existing. And that's no way to live a life, by just existing, especially when you can have so much more.
Zach, did you have something to say?
Yeah, I think it's important to, in this discussion, it's important to go back to see why was the Republican Party founded? You see, as I travel the state, hardly any when I speak to Republicans, hardly any of them understand when the Republican Party came about and why it came about. And the Republican Party came about in 1854 because they saw the egregious behavior of the Democrat Republican Party and what it had done since most of our founding fathers had already passed away since 1820. You see, most people don't realize that in 1808, by constitutionally, that the slave trade was abolished. And slavery began to make a pullback. But in 1820, with the Missouri Compromise, and then you went even further than that in 1857, when the Supreme Court ruled in the Dred Scott ruling that said that black people were not even persons, and that they were better to be slaves. You see, what it was all about was power and control to keep black people in slavery. You see.
Well, yeah.
And now what we have today is with the welfare and the handouts, we have still attacking the spirit of independence, and we're squashing that and replacing it with the spirit of dependence. Why? Because it's about power and control. You see, the Democrats that was the Democrat-controlled Supreme Court in 1857 that made that ruling, and the Democrat-controlled Congress back from 1820 all the way up to that point had began to push slavery, 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 because that was power and control. And most of the southern states, the reason why they didn't want a slavery abolished is because the slaves outnumbered the other people. And so it was, again, about power and control. So what Brian was talking about, hey, these people are barely making enough to get by. It's not a good life. lifestyle. You know, it's, you're not ever going to get ahead if that's all you do. Well, they don't want them to get ahead because they want them dependent. They want that power and control. And if we go back and look, the Republican Party in 1854 formed, they had nine pieces of their platform, and six of them dealt with equality of men, because they had seen that since 1820, and most of our founding fathers had already died, that we had gotten so far away from that. And we look back, and we have gotten even further away from it, so we've got to get back to where we truly believe that all people are created equal, and we focus on all solutions with transparency and equality, and with the requirement of individual liberty and economic freedom.
Well, your history, Zach, is obviously a lot better than mine. But I will say this, in regards to what we've just been discussing, I do see welfare myself, Brian, and maybe perhaps you'll agree with me on this. I see welfare and food stamps as a form of modern day slavery, and it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with just keeping people enshackled to that Democratic, or that Democrat, I should say, Democrat capital D party mantra of keeping people oppressed, so that they can continue to say, "We've got the answer for you."
Right. Oh, it could be compared to a system of modern-day slavery. Yeah, I would agree with that, because that's effectively what is happening. And when and you become enslaved to a system that is providing for you. And you also have to realize that when you take government money, regardless of the program, it doesn't have to be welfare, any government money, it comes with restrictions. It comes with strings attached. And they tell you how you can use that money. They dictate to you how to do things, and that's the problem with a lot of these government programs. That it's just a way of keeping tabs on American citizens.
Well, we lost Zach, but Brian, that's fine because this is your time. So let's talk about some of the issues that Brian Cahill in regards to the Northeast, because I fully understand that a Republican in your neck of the woods is completely different. Let me just rephrase that, because I'm not saying that right. You seem
right.
to be
no,
a very
we're going to have different issues.
Exactly.
We got to focus on it. I heard you talking about immigration. That's not a big issue up here. We're not a border state, so I'm not going to be talking about immigration as much as I'm going to be talking about the economy.
Exactly. So let's talk about the issues that are important to Brian Cahill.
Well, obviously, the number one issue is the economy, and that's what I'm focused on. I don't know if you've gone to my website and seen my plan to secure America's future. We got to get back to the basics, and that is the RRR. But Brian Cahill's redefined RRR. It's no longer reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's reduce, reform, restructure.
I love it.
Yeah. To secure America's future, we have to reduce, reform, and restructure the way government does business. And that means, with respect to the economy, we got to reduce the size of the federal government. It's way too big. I believe, as Thomas Paine did, that government which governs least governs best. Big government is not the solution. Big government is the problem. We haven't had a big government program anywhere that has been successful in my lifetime. And yet we keep trying to come up with government programs to solve problems. It just doesn't work. We got to reduce the size of federal government. Then we got to reform our entitlement programs, the second R. Entitlement programs is where we're spending the bulk of our funds. So we got to reform these entitlement programs to promote dependency as opposed to promote independency as opposed to promoting dependency. And then the third thing we got to do is restructure our tax code. Now, restructuring our tax code, I borrowed Herman Cain's 999 plan. That is the last R in my plan, restructuring the tax code. I just, they say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, 999 is a plan that's not broke. It's a good program. I adopted it as the R in my RRR plan, the last R, and it just follows the 999 plan, a straight flat tax of 9 for individuals, 9 for businesses, and a 9% sales tax. I believe that that will jumpstart this economy. It will eliminate all the double forms of taxation, you know, the estate taxes, gift taxes, payroll taxes, you name it. It will eliminate all of these hidden taxes like the gas taxes, food taxes, things that you don't even see that we're paying for because it's not advertised anywhere. For instance, every time you go to the gas station, you're paying 18.4 cents a gallon is going to the federal government. And it's nowhere advertised at the pump. It's just included in the price. That stuff will be eliminated under my program. So there's lots of things to be done by restructuring this tax code. We would give companies incentives to keep jobs overseas as opposed to send jobs, keep jobs in America as opposed to send jobs overseas. We would end this corporate welfare as we know it. All these subsidies, all that stuff would be thrown out the window. And we save a lot of money and put a lot of Americans back to work. We make sure that the 50% of Americans that are not paying federal income tax start paying something. Because right now, almost 50% of Americans don't pay federal tax. That means the 50% that is paying is supplementing the 50% that's not paying. We can no longer continue like this. We collect $2 trillion worth of tax revenue every year. From 50% of the population. So we got to get some more tax revenue, and everybody was paying their fair share, we would have enough taxes to cover our budget. And actually, we would have a surplus if we did it correctly. So I have a plan in place that is comprehensive. It's easy to follow. It's easy to implement. When people say, how are you going to reduce the size of the federal government? I say, look at a GAO report that just came out last year in March. I have it up on my website. The GAO report is on my website. GAO, Government Accountability Office, did a study last year in the spring that said that there are over almost 100 federal programs that have duplicate or overlapping responsibilities, and we could save billions of dollars a year just by consolidating some of these federal programs. The senator that commissioned GAO to do the study estimates that between $1 and $200 billion a year could be saved just by addressing these duplicate programs that were highlighted in that GAO report. Now, that's just at the federal level. A lot of these programs are duplicated at the state level and then duplicated again at the local level. It's ridiculous. We could save a lot of money just by reducing the size of the federal government and consolidating all of these overlapping programs and agencies. We need to downsize some of these agencies that we have in place. We have a Department of Energy that was designed to get us to make us energy independent. Well, guess what? We're no closer to being energy independent than we were before we started the AGP. We got a Department of Education supposed to fix our education system. Our education system is just as bad now as when we started the Department of Education. Matter of fact, our education system was probably in better shape before we started the Department of Education. So we got a lot of agencies out there that are not doing what they're designed to do. When we establish these programs and agencies, there ought to be a sunset provision in place that evaluates these programs, these agencies, these offices after a period of time to make sure that they're running efficiently. If they're not running efficiently, they ought to be scrapped. We shouldn't continue running inefficient programs. They say that the Medicare budget, GAO again, did a study that determined that $40 billion a year, $40 billion a year, the Medicare budget is waste, fraud, and abuse, 10%, waste, fraud, and abuse. Attorney General Holder puts the number at $70 billion a year. That's just one program. We're wasting money by having big government. We need to reduce the size of the government, cut out all these overlapping programs, put that money to where it can be better used, and get this country back moving again. So we don't need to raise taxes on people. We just need to get the government running more efficiently.
Wow, Brian, this is amazing. To listen to you, my God, you know so much. I find myself kind of reeling from this. I just want to read something real quick. I guess you just recently had a debate And from best to worst, number one, Brian Cahill, and this is what they said. The best performance of the night goes to Brian Cahill. This isn't to say that his performance totally outshined the rest of the field, but by some wide margin. But Hill presented his positions extremely well, to the point where he rose slightly above the rest of all the other candidates. He came across knowledgeable and calm when presenting his positions, an improvement from, I don't know what all that says. At that point, Brian also asked about the famous 999 plan. Now, when you talk about 999, you're going to raise mine and Danny's and Teresa's. Our ears are going to perk up. We're all ex-Kane people. Plan, to everyone's astonishment, he talked in detail. Now, listen to this, folks. Brian Cahill planned, and to everyone's astonishment, he talked in detail about the benefits and misunderstandings of the 999 plan, in fact, much better than Mr. Kane. And then he goes on to say, at one point, Mr. Hill brought up Ronald Reagan's 11th Amendment, sensing that Peter Lumage was getting a bit out of hand, and he was right to do so. It goes on to say that you played the role of party negotiators while the others simply looked on. That is amazing. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, you know, I Republicans are not going to get anywhere by bashing each other, and we've had two debates. We've had two debates since then. That was on Thursday. We had another debate on Friday, which was a little bit more low-key, and then we had a debate earlier today that was on live television. In the largest network, TV network on this half of the state, WFSB Channel 3. And you saw the bashing again today. We don't get anywhere bashing each other. We make ourselves look bad. The fact of the matter is, in the state of Connecticut, Republicans make up a minority of the voters. We're less than one-third of the voters here. Okay? So it's mathematically impossible for us to win a statewide election unless we get votes from independents and conservative Democrats. There's just not enough of us. And if we are divided as a party, you know, the independents are not going to vote for us. They're going to look at us and say, do the Republicans have their act together? Oh, no, they're bashing each other. Let's just go with the Democrats. At least they're organized. You know, so we're doing ourselves a disservice by attacking each other. Just stick to the issue. You saw this a lot in the presidential campaign. Unfortunately, candidates were bashing each other. They were bashing each other, and what they were doing is driving up Obama's poll numbers. We can't do this. Just everybody has a platform. You don't need to tell others why you should not vote for somebody else. Explain why you should vote for them. You know, just talk about your program. Talk about why you're the best candidate. We don't need all this name calling and all this negative campaigning, because it just makes the party look bad. And if it's too much of a bloodbath, when we come out of our convention, there's no way to unite everybody because there's so much bad blood. You can't name-call people in front of everybody and second just to forget about it, you know, a couple of weeks later. It doesn't work like that. And we're not helping the party. We're not helping the image of the Republicans, because they already think people already think negative of Republicans in the first place, and all we're doing is just giving them ammunition. So, yes, I invoked Ronald Reagan's 11th Commandment, thou shalt not bash other Republicans, because it was just getting to the point where it was getting ridiculous. I was the only person up there that had a comprehensive plan, and I could I could talk about every aspect of that plan in detail, because I wrote it. And I understand Mr. Kane's 999 plan, which is the third R. So that's the kind of thing that I think people and voters want to see. They want to see, what plan do you have to take this country forward, to take this state forward? They don't want to hear you say, candidates bashing other candidates and say, don't vote for this person because of X, whatever. They don't want to hear that. They want to know what you're going to do for them. What are you going to do for the country? We got enough bashing. We got enough gridlock in Washington. We have a Congress that is working against each other instead of working together. And then we wonder why the country is in the state that it's in. This is exactly why. We've had enough of this. We need people to stop blaming other people for the problem and just get the job done. This is the reason why we need more veterans in Congress. currently less than 30%, less than 30%, you may notice, Mike, less than 30% of the 535 members of Congress are military veterans. Less than 30%. That is atrocious. We got to have more veterans in Congress. Veterans, military people know how to get things done. We don't sit around and blame everybody. We play the hand that we're dealt. We get the job done and go back home. That's what we're supposed to do. And we got too many career politicians. They stay in office too long, and they become a part of the problem instead of a part of the solution. And so we need to get rid of these career politicians because they're really destroying this country. And we have way too many of them in the state of Connecticut. And I, for the life of me, don't understand why voters keep reelecting these career politicians, because they're obviously destroying this country.
Well, it's because their name's at the top of the ballot. And Brian, and Zach's back on the line with us, by the way. He accidentally got disconnected. But, Brian, to what you were just saying, I think not only is it because their name's at the top of the ballot, unfortunately, I think too many of us are apathetic. And you're absolutely right. We need to get more veterans in. And that might be a good cause. That might be something I need to start looking at, and factually, is roping veterans in. I've got some ideas on this. We might need to talk offline, because you're absolutely right. And I think in 50 years from now, the way we write about Mike, I think I'm a little older than you gentlemen. The way we write about my grandparents, who are World War II veterans, as the greatest generation, I think, in 25, 50 years, we'll be writing about you gentlemen who served in the Middle East in either Gulf War One, or in Gulf War II or Afghanistan as the next greatest generation. And it's you young folks that we need to get in there. I'm a grassroots guy. That's all I want to be. I don't want to run. I want to help people like you gentlemen get in office, and I want to do it. I'm a pit bull, and I've either got a leash on me or I've got a leash off of me. It depends on who I'm pushing message for and unleashes that leash. It's for you guys, you Zach and you Brian, and for Senator Santorum. For Matt Krause, for Ted Cruz, it's for you guys that I do what I do, and what Danny Shouse, my brother in Kentucky, does, and Teresa, and all of us. We're just message pushers. We're grassroots people that want to get the right people in. We're all bulldogs. Take the leash off of us, and we're going to help to get you there. But we need to get more people like you there.
And let me just thank you for pushing that message, and I have I want to pass on a shout-out from my communications director, Chip Jones, to Teresa, who was helping us out on Twitter on Thursday night. We really do appreciate you guys pushing out this message nationally, because we're all in the same boat. I may be in a different state than you are, but we're all in the same boat as far as being American citizens and having to deal with a Congress that is working against the American people. So we're all in the same boat. It doesn't matter where we are. We should be working towards the same end, which is getting our people elected so that we can get in Congress and start reversing some of these ridiculous policies that are destroying this country.
Absolutely. And by the way, Teresa's my tweet guru. So between her and a group of us, we'll get both yours and Zach's information out. Let's bring Zach back in here. I'd like to bring Danny in, and I'd like to, if Brian, if you're all right with it, I'd like to bring in a fellow he does another conservative show for us. Rick, you there?
I am Michael, and thank you for having me.
Hey, Rick.
How are you doing?
Good, good to hear your voice again.
Good to hear you too.
Back off the mic, bud. And I've got Zach Poskovich and Brian Cahill on with us. Rick does a fantastic conservative radio show on. I'll let Rick give the details.
Michael, I had Ryan on my show on the 14th.
Right.
There you go. So I want to encourage other people to call in 718-305-7176. Look, this is a great day in Soldiers of Patriotism Radio. I've got two candidates for U.S. Senate, one for Tennessee, and Zach Poskovich, one from Connecticut, Frank K. Hill, two great Patriots, two veterans whom are I love, just if for no other reason for that, because we veterans have a special bond. I don't know, guys. How do you, how do you explain that in terms that people understand? Brian, Zach?
Oh, yeah. Well, it definitely is a special bond. And when you're fighting together, you know, it's just something that you have to experience to really, really understand it. When your buddy is the only thing that you have to depend on for your life, that's a bond that, you know, there's very few bonds like that in life. So.
And
it's very unique. The military, I mean, you can have bonds, other types of bonds, with your family members, with a loved one, and it's just as deep with the military members. You can go anywhere in the world, and let somebody know you're in the military, you have an automatic bond.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, and I opened up my show talking about patriotism and service to one's country, and in particular to a resolution that was tried to push through in our senatorial convention yesterday, which I view as a isolationist, Ron Paul attempt to put something into our party platform here in Tarrant County that I didn't agree with, along with legalization of drugs. I mean, you could definitely see the earmarks of them there. And I fought and I won that battle. And it's been a long time since I'd done battle, but I stood at that microphone before a couple of hundred people, and in tears I said, this is not right. This is not going to happen. Not in the reddest county of the reddest state in the union. That aside, you're absolutely, Brian and Zach, I think, would agree. You know, when I was in it, we were all in at different times. We're all of different generations.
Oh, yeah.
But what you're saying, Brian, is for those that don't understand, when you're in a situation where you put your life in the hands of someone that you expect to have your back or that expects for you to have their back, you're giving a lot.
Yeah.
And you form a bond with that person that words just can't measure.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So let's open up the round table. I want to thank you both, and I would like to get some people to call in. I want to thank you both for calling in today. Let's start with Zach, and then Brian after Zach. First of all, let me pledge to you that I will do what I can to push your message. I have a pretty good secretary on tweet. I'll get her fired up. We'll start getting your message out on my tweet machine. Teresa is the tweet pro. Let me tell you, her Becca L. keep me straight. We're going to work on getting your message out. How can folks help you guys? Tell us, Zach, and then Brian, tell us, how can people outside of Connecticut and Tennessee help in the cause? Because really, let's be frank. You know what? It's one thing for me to help Ted Cruz here in Texas, but either I need to help and put up some money or do what I can socially in the social media realm for folks outside of my state. If I want to see come to fruition those things which I hold dearest to my heart. So can both of you speak to that, and then let's bring Danny on and Rick on to ask you fellas some questions.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I believe the message there is that in order to get our country back and return power to the people, it's going to take more than just focusing on our individual states. We have to look at all 50 states and see which or who is up for re-election and what is their voting record. Does it comply with our founding principles? And if not, then those are the ones that if we don't remove from office, you can elect Brian to Connecticut, but if we don't have a movement across this state, it's going to make Brian's job better. Just think of if we were able to provide Brian, Ted Cruz, and myself, there's three key people that could move to help move the Senate toward not center, but move it more to the right, which is what our founding principles are. And so what I would say is how people across this nation can help is look at each race individually and ask themselves, Do I need to support somebody in my state? Is my senator, my congressman, are they off track? If so, get involved in that local race, but then look at other races and say, how can I support them? Do I have family members in those states that maybe they're not awake and I can help wake them up? Do I have friends in those states? Hey, do you know what your senator or your congressman is doing, that they're voting against you? And then three is, as you talk to everybody within your network, is to raise money for those people that are having a hard time raising money. Now, I can speak it with experience here because Bob Corker, my incumbent and my opponent, is very well entrenched in the Republican establishment, and he wasn't even expected to have an opponent, and he was able to raise, by the end of last year, $7.5 million, you know, without even blinking. So what I would ask is if people truly believe that liberty is in the balance in 2012, is to look at every candidate and see how they can best work and support those candidates. Some can do their time, some can do monetarily, some can do blogging and Twittering, and man, that is so important because that helps get the message out to even more people. So that would be my advice.
And I appreciate that, Zach. Brian, what do you think?
Well, Zach gave great advice. There's not too much I can add to that. It's the little things that really make a difference, getting out on Facebook and Twitter, getting the message out, retweeting things, donating small dollar amounts. If we had, you know, 1 million people donate $5, you know, that's $5 million. So, you know, we got to what you think is a small part, a small thing is actually something big in the aggregate if we work together. And that's the thing. We have to look at the big picture. It's not just one person, but it's a bunch of people working together towards the same end that makes a difference. And so we need to work together. We need to do all the things that Zach said and try to get that message out because, again, we're all in the same boat. It doesn't matter where we are. We're all in the same boat. And guess what? This boat is heading in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know what would just be – well, I was just sitting here thinking it – I don't know what – the blessing that God has – wow – has put on me today to have both of you gentlemen on my show at one time. And I need to do a real quick PSA for a group an organization that I believe very firmly in, and it gives me a second to walk away from the computer. But while we do this 2 minute and 1 second PSA, I'd like for all of us to think about for a minute how important this is. And you know, While most people may not understand the importance of what you're doing in your district or in your state, Brian, or what you're doing in your district, Zach, let's put this let's embody this in the realm of someone we can all understand that how important it is as a country we come together and we do what we can do for folks like you. Let's just take a look at District 22 in Florida, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. That lady's got to go. Now, I don't know who's the best candidate down there. I've got a friend in Joe Goldner. I know of and have spoken to Karen Harrington. I don't know how that primary is going to play out, but that lady's got to go. That means maybe $5 of my money needs to go to each of them to get her gone. I don't know. Let's think about that for a minute. I just need to do – I have got to play this PSA. It takes about 2 minutes, and Brian and Zach, I know that you both will appreciate this PSA, okay?
Okay, not a problem.
When a call for a medic went out, Alan left a covered position to run to render aid. That was when he was hit.
The bullet struck him on the right side between his body armor.
Say a prayer.
Alan was
one of the first wounded warriors to come out of Iraq in 2003. I'm Trace Adkins, and I want to tell you about Wounded Warrior Project and how they helped this brave young man and his family.
There was life in his eyes, but everything else was non-responsive.
The doctors anticipated that Alan would be bedridden and need to be spoon-fed for the rest of his life.
The job of helping wounded warriors rebuild their lives is massive and growing every day. Your gift of just $19 a month will help wounded warriors like Alan, who refuse to give up.
I'm in the fields of Vietnam, the mountains of Afghanistan.
Alan earned the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star for his actions on the battlefield. He is a true American hero. But Alan became my hero for the battle he fought day after day after day to get his life back.
Your call today and a gift of $19 a month can help provide our wounded warriors with desperately needed programs and services through Wounded Warrior Project.
I would encourage you to donate to the Wounded Warrior Project.
It's going to take a lot of us for a long time to help these young men and women.
Call or go online with a pledge of $19 a month and you'll receive this Wounded Warrior Project blanket.
Wounded Warrior Project, all I can really say is thank you. Thank you for being there and giving me something to achieve.
Say a prayer for peace.
Well, it tears me up every time. Hey, we've got Zach Poskovich. You can find him at ZachForSenate.com. Who is running for the U.S. Senate in Tennessee. And we've got Brian Cahill at BrianCahill.com, who is running in Connecticut for the U.S. Senate. Two great patriots, folks. We need to send whatever we can to these two gentlemen. I don't care if it's money. I don't care if it's a little bit of time tweeting about them. I don't care if it's a little time pushing their message on Facebook. We all are good at something. Everybody that's on the chat board, everybody that's listening to us, I know all of you. We're grassroots people. We're message pushers. Mm-hmm. And we push messages for these people right here. It's not about who we support for president anymore. Okay? We all have going to have to get accustomed to the fact that we're going to have to vote for who we're going to have to vote for in November if we're going to defeat President Obama. And I say that with respect to the office. But we've got to get people in the lower house and in the upper house that regardless of who wins POTUS, we've got people in there that are going to hold either one of them's feet to the fire. It's either going to be to fight a socialist agenda or it's going to be to hold a person who many of us are still having a hard time coming to trust, holding his feet to the fire. And I trust both of these gentlemen. I've read extensively their biographies. I've read extensively their websites. And I believe these two gentlemen are two gentlemen that we need to have along with Ted Cruz up in Washington to fight in the cause of liberty, to fight in the cause of conservatism. So again, that's Zach Poskovich. Pardon me, Zach. I'm sorry, I'm a Texan. I don't speak real well. And that's at ZachForSenate.com and Brian Cahill for U.S. Senate at BrianCahill.com. And that's K, the letter K, Hill, H-I-L-L.com. So let me bring you back both in, just kind of wrap up, and then let's bring in Danny and let's bring in Rick, and hopefully we'll get some other calls. Zach, go ahead.
I'm sorry, it wasn't a question, was there?
No, it really wasn't a question. I'm just giving you...
I listened to your introduction, and I thought, did I miss something? Was it a question?
I'm your typical Texan, buddy. I people that I stand for and believe in, I pump them up and then just say, come on, talk to me.
I was thinking the same thing, Zach. Not crazy.
That's wonderful, though, folks. Really, this is incredible. This is so incredible to have two candidates on my program. I wish my buddy Becca was here. And I know that.
Now, if you had asked me something, I missed it. I was going to claim I had a Rick Perry moment, but.
Oops. Hey, I love it. Hey, look, I love my governor, but he's done a few things. I'm going to be honest with both of you. He's done a few things that we conservatives have a hard time with here in Texas. And one of them was the Gardasil initiative. The other was the Transcontinental Highway. Just both big government initiatives that we conservatives here in Texas, and you know, both of you probably are aware that Texas is the reddest of red states, and I happen to live in Tarrant County, which is the reddest of the red county. I mean, most every county in Texas, maybe other than Travis or Behar, is red. But Travis or Tarrant County is the reddest of the red. When our GOP chair calls down to Austin and says we need something done, and they ask why, it's because if you don't, Tarrant County's going to have a hard problem with you. They change their attitude.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's just kind of the way
that, you know, just a comment, you know, as people look at this election, one of the things that they should be asking is, how do we return power back to the people? We know that the Constitution laid out limited powers, and we know that our elected officials are violating that Constitution on a daily basis because we no longer have leaders who will demonstrate courage and stand up for what is right, but rather fall into the government knows best and a going along to get along attitude. So how do you fight for something that's bigger than a person? You know, I always tell people, look, my candidacy is not about Zach Poskovich, and that's what makes my candidacy different than anybody else's, because I'm going to protect and defend the American legacy, not to try to build a personal legacy or a political career. So when we look at that, what is the one thing or what are the things that we can fight for in order to turn our country or turn our government around? And the only way to do that is to things that promote transparency and equality. And that's why, you know, the tax system doesn't need to be reformed. It needs to be overhauled. And Brian spoke on that earlier. And that is a key aspect. If we want to turn our government upside down and to send the business lobbyists home, because remember, the only reason they're in Washington is to get the elected officials to pass some law, to give them some benefit within the tax code so that it benefits them, not the American people. And so the 999 plan is a paramount ingredient to turning our government upside down and giving that power back to the people.
Absolutely. Brian?
No, that's a great summation from Zach. We do need to return the power back to the people, and that means reducing the size of government to that which is only necessary to operate the government. We got the president every other week. He's got a czar for something. You know, we can't have all of these government agencies out here unsupervised. Nobody knows what the Federal Reserve does. You know, it's just too much. We need to cut this government down to a manageable size. If we cut it down to a manageable size, they wouldn't be so intrusive as they are. This government, I mean, they want to dictate, you know, what light bulbs you can put in your house. They want to dictate how many calories in a Happy Meal. They want to dictate what questions are on your kid's test. They want to dictate what you can do in the privacy of your own home. They want to dictate what your doctor, what procedures your doctor can prescribe when you get sick. I mean, it's just getting to the point where it's getting ridiculous because this government size is growing. We need to ratchet it back. We need to reduce the size of the federal government. I think that will go a long way to getting the government off our back, because right now the government is just on people's back.
You know what? Before I bring Danny, stand by. I'm going to ask. I just want to ask something of Zach and Brian, and then let them respond. And then Danny, I'd like you to come on and ask some questions. And Rick, right behind Danny. You know, guys, Brian and Zach. Yesterday we had our senatorial conventions here in Texas. I'm grateful to say that I was elected a delegate to state. Now, if thank you. And if I learned nothing else yesterday, I learned a couple of things. You see, because part of the reason I became a delegate to state was because I happened to have a friend that was on the nominations committee that went to battle for me and got me as a delegate. Now, I may still have passed muster without him being on there. I don't know. But I do know he was on there, and I do know that it was a lot of people that wanted to be delegates to state. It was fierce competition, and I do know that he went to battle for me. The point that I want to drive home to, and I'd like both of you to speak briefly to this, and then we'll bring Danny and Rick on, is most everybody that's listening right now to both of you all are conservative, grassroots, Tea Party people that are information pushers. That's what we've done. Myself, I'm new to the delegate process. I'm new to the going to the convention process. I'm the pit bull, Michael Smith. Give me the information. Tell me what you need done, and I'm going to push it for you. I'm new to this whole other aspect of it. And if I learned nothing else yesterday, I did learn that grassroots activism is more than just fighting for a person or persons. It's more than just pushing a message, and it's about becoming a delegate to your precinct, to your senatorial district, to your state convention, and even more so, it's about getting on a committee. It's about being on that nominations or that primary organization, or because of the battle that I had yesterday, it's about being on that resolutions committee and making sure that rules are not put on, or resolutions are not placed on our platform that do not uphold the traditional American values that we all agree with or believe in. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Want me to start with that?
Please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, Mike. We have a convention here in the state of Connecticut, and those delegates are deciding who the endorsed nominee is. There'll be about 1,250 of them here in the state of Connecticut. And those voters are deciding for the rest of the voters of the state of Connecticut, the Republican voters, who our nominee is. And so that's significant power. And, you know, the establishment wants to put they want to stack the deck in their favor so they can get the candidate that they want. So it all starts at the RTC, the Republican Town Committee level, getting on these committees, being a delegate to the convention, being a part of the rules committee, because, you know, the devil is always in the details. And what you're talking about is making sure that you're in the details so you can see what's going on, so that you can have transparency to make sure that we get that we have a fair process. Because the problem with the Republican Party is that a lot of people think that things are done, you know, behind closed doors and back rooms, and a lot of times it is. It's true. And we cannot have that and expect to be united as a party if we're doing things in a manner that people perceive as being underhanded. Not to say that it is, but if the perception it is that it is, then it is, because perception is reality. So
yeah,
you're right for getting on these committees, because that's where the rubber meets the road. And a lot of people they help out with campaigns, but they don't get involved in things like what you just described. And when it really counts, they don't have a voice. So being a delegate, being on these committees, gives you a powerful voice in the party, and a lot of people need to understand that. I actually wish we didn't have a convention. I would prefer to go straight to a primary and let all of the voters in the state of Connecticut decide who the nominee is, as opposed to having just a select few vote on the endorsed candidate, because there's only been a few times in the history of the state of Connecticut where the candidate that was not endorsed, let me say it again, that was not endorsed, won the primary election. So generally what happens is whoever gets that endorsement is going to win the primary. So it's very, very important that we have our people serving in these roles so that they can be a part of the process that is ultimately going to determine who our nominee is. So I commend you for fighting for that position, because it's going to make a hell of a difference, and you're going to get an eye-opener once you see how things are really done. And you're going to see who the players are, and you're going to see the good, the bad, and the ugly, but mostly you're going to see the ugly, unfortunately. So,
you're right, Brian. And you know what? This is what saddens me, because if we could go back 2 years, had I known, Brian, I am a Rick Santorum supporter, okay? I'll vote for who I have to vote for in November on our party's nomination. But I am, thus far, I am a Rick Santorum supporter. So as a delegate, you know, I'm telling you now how in Texas I'm going to vote my personal vote in the primary on May 29th, as well as my delegate strength at state in the early week, the first week of July or June.
Right.
So, but here's the thing. Had 2 years ago, we've been prepared for this, because the battle is within our own party. If
right.
What I want, let me say that if what I want to happen should happen, the battle should have started 2 years ago. I'll give you an example. My wife is a Ron Paul supporter, and she was laughed out of credentials. Okay. Well, now credentials, I'll tell you, probably for the most part, it's going to go with Mitt Romney.
Right.
But they would tolerate me much more than they would her. So she was laughed out of before the credentials nomination or committee. So it's important. And this, folks, this is the point I'm trying to stress. This is where we affect change.
Yes.
But we can't do it at the last minute. We have to. In other words, if in 4 years, if, God forbid, Governor Romney not successful, if there's enough people that finally say, okay, you know what, 59% of the people, if you take the Nudies and the Rickies and combine them together, 59% of the people did not like Mitt Romney in the states where he was not running unopposed thus far, did not like Mitt Romney, then we got to change that now. And the only way we can change that now, and I'm not putting Brian or Zach on the spot, I'm not asking either one of you to say or endorse anybody, but as a grassroots person, speaking to my grassroots people, we have to start now. We have to get in those committees now, folks. We have to get in those nominations committees. And if we want to prevent isolationist and drug legalization laws like was tried to put through on us yesterday, we have to get on those committees now so we can affect change 4 years from now. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, let me back up just 1 minute, if I could, and talk about your other question. I think, you know, your involvement there is, you know, it's a celebrating our republic. And I think the point is very critical in that there's a lot of discussion about the Electoral College, which this is kind of setting that stage for it, right? It's that on-the-spot training that ultimately, once the convention's over and then now we go to the Electoral College to see who actually wins the presidency, and we get to see the beauty and the intelligence of our founding fathers. You see, there's a lot of discussion today about NPV, the national popular vote, and that's what we should go by. But that is nothing but a deceitful attempt to allow larger and more liberal states to have more control over smaller or more conservative states. And what you and Brian and others are doing and being the delegates, that's kind of setting the stage and participating in that process that we have in our republic that ultimately feeds into that Electoral College selection process.
Absolutely. Brian?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You have to start early because, like I said earlier, the devil is in the details. And, you know, I hate to say this, but a lot of times the deck is going to be stacked, and it's stacked in those committees. And so you have to start early. But you also have to recognize that what's going on, and you have to be sensitized to some of these issues. So educating our people, letting them know, you know, you got to get started early if you want to affect change 4 years from now or 2 years from now, and this is what you're going to do. You got to lay out a blueprint for people. You got to have training, and I don't think we're doing an adequate job of doing that because we get to the game late, you know, and you know, the first inning's already over, and it's, you can't replay it. So, you know, so we're stuck. And
well, and here's the funny Here's the funny thing about it, Brian. The Republican Party is, regardless of what the media wants to paint, the Republican Party is the true grassroots party. Our whole process is built around grassroots activism.
Yes, I would agree with that.
So let's go. Hey guys, let's go ahead. We're down to about 30 minutes out. I need about 10 minutes to close up. I want to like to go ahead and bring in my brother from Kentucky, and that probably requires some quantification. But Danny and I are both Freemasons. He's my brother spiritually and in a lot of ways. I'd like to bring in my brother Shouse, and then we'll bring Rick in. Brother Shouse, what say you to these fine two gentlemen?
Well, they really sounded great, and I've been Twittering and copying and pasting for both of them. And I seen Brian Cahill the other night on his Senate debate, and I'd like to point out that in that debate, they asked him about the Democrats he could work with. And, you know, they never asked the Democrats the Republicans they can work with.
Yeah.
And it seems like when you do work with Democrats, the only thing we get is one step closer to socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's absolutely right about that. You know, these debates are designed to make the Republican candidate look bad. And they stack the deck. And they ask questions that they know are going to paint Republicans so far to the right that the average Connecticut voter is not going to vote for them. And it's really sad to see. They tried to trap us today by asking us about gay marriage, immigration, all of the traditional hot-button issues, when in fact they did not ask the Democrats these questions, but they're asking the Republicans these questions. I understand exactly what the caller is talking about. They don't ask how are you going to work with Republicans, it's just how are we going to work with the Democrats. And it's not fair, but we have to play the hand that we're dealt. And when answering these questions, you have to be cognizant that they're trying to trap. Because this is a liberal media area in the state of Connecticut. They're trying to trap you. So you can't have an answer that paints you so far to the right. You have to still come across as reasonable. Because we have to understand the bottom line is getting elected. That's the bottom line. And you have to come across as reasonable to a voter to get elected. What you do when you get in office, you know, that's a different thing, but we gotta get elected, because right now we don't have a seat at the table in the state of Connecticut. We don't have any of these federal seats, so it's imperative that we do the things necessary to get elected so that we can start affecting change. Because we can't affect change if we're not in office, and we're not going to get in office by falling into the media traps when we get in these public forums like these debates. So I don't even remember what I said, but I probably said something about I can work with anybody.
Yeah,
which is true. I would work with anybody.
But
I'll give you a chance.
Need to point out that when the Democrats had a filibuster-proof Senate, they did nothing to advance gay marriage. So why are they asking you about it?
Exactly. I can't do anything about it anyway. That's already been voted on in Congress with the Defense of Marriage Act. The next legal stage is for that to go to the Supreme Court. So why are they even, it's not even an issue for federal candidates, but they're asking us about gay marriage because that's the hot-button issues of gay people, and they know that. They know that. The media knows that. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, and you know, they're always going to stack the deck against us. And here's the thing: as I'm sure all of you both listen to Rush or Mark Levin, they're always the compromise is not the Democrats working with us. Compromise is, as far as the mainstream media and the Democrats are concerned, is if we give in to our principles. That's compromise.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And we've got to change that. I mean, it's sickening, you know. And I think Brian and Zach, you know, that's why the Tea Party has become as big as it has. You know, I think Zach opened up his segment with, you know, we have people up in Washington that even though they're in our party, they're not doing our bidding. You know, it takes no cojones to put down a Democrat or to oppose a Democrat, but it takes humongous cojones to oppose your own party. And let's face it, our party has done some stuff over the years. Look, I love George W. as much as the next person. What he did after 9/11 is commendable, but compassionate conservatism thing only goes so far. It's not fiscal conservatism, and that's what we're all about. He was a big spending neocon Machiavellian, just as the architect, Karl Rove, who I can't stand anymore. So many of the Republicans we have up there now are Machiavellians. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I think that's where we have to remind ourselves and the general population and the residents of our state is that our loyalty is not with party, it's not with a person, it's not with a group. Our loyalty is with the Constitution. George Washington warned us about the party system. He said that the party system is a threat to our individual liberty because the parties would soon lose focus on individual liberty and only focus on their power and control. And that's exactly what we've seen. We've seen the Republicans work their way in to the Democrats, but it's some of this is off stage. It's no different. A great example is my opponent, Bob Corker. The Frank Dodd bill would have never seen the light of day, but Bob Corker stepped forward to work with Christy Dodd, in order to put that bill together. And then he pulled away from it at the end and voted against it.
Well,
that's nothing more than the lines being blurred and people within the establishment maneuvering to keep their power and to show people that they're either making progress on things that they feel are important or they're not. And we have to, the reason why we have apathy is reigning in our society today is because there's not that stark contrast between Democrats and Republicans any longer. We need to restore that, and that's why I'm running in this race, is to show what our Republican principles are. And that stark contrast to give people a choice. It's not the same to vote for a Democrat or a Republican. It shouldn't be the same. And if you think it's the same, then you're voting for the wrong people. You need to be voting for other people.
Hey, I just want to remind both of you gentlemen, I want to plant a bug in your ears, but both you, Brian, and you, Zach, something to remember when... And let me say it this way. When you get to Washington next January, because I believe y'all will, okay? As a Santorum supporter, the biggest disappointment to we conservatives, not only Santorum, but Newt Gingrich supporters. So you're talking about 59% of the vote was the day that Marco Rubio, whom most of us are Tea Partiers, endorsed Mitt. Now, fine, he endorsed him, he did what he had to do, whatever. I don't want to debate that. But most Tea Partiers do not stand behind Mitt. okay? We'll vote for him if we have to. Where I'm going with this is this. It was a disappointment to us in the effort in the work that we put in getting folks like Senator Rubio and Senator Ryan, or Congressman Ryan, in for them to do this for us, or to do this to us. And, you know, I don't really know where I'm going with that, except for to say that the Tea Party conservatives are not establishment Republicans. And this is the way we see being fed like pablum since last summer, this whole deal. And look, I don't want to get you guys in hot water. I don't want you, all I want you to do is just keep that in mind, okay? I don't want you to really respond to that because that you guys are running your own campaigns. We need to get you in. It's not about who you endorse for president. But there's many of us out here that we have a really huge problem with what people that we believe to be Tea Party conservatives have done.
Yeah. That's understandable. We hear you. We hear you.
Rick, come on in here. Do you have something for Brian or for Zach before we start wrapping this show up?
Well, first off, again, I'd like to thank Brian for being on my show a couple of Saturdays ago. I mean, he was a wonderful guest, and I don't know much about Zach, but I am going to look into him a little bit more and hope to try and fit him as a guest on my own show on Saturdays.
Yeah, that'd be great. At ZachForSenate.com. You can get all the details right there.
We'll definitely do that, Zach. And
I appreciate
and you, and both of you keep up the good work, and you know that you have another person out there that'll be tweeting and doing anything and doing anything I can for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, Zach, Brian, let's start with you, and then Zach will finish up with you. I'd like to give you guys a couple of minutes to just wrap up with what you have to say about what you need, what you want, whatever we can do for you, whatever. Take 5 minutes each, please. And
I won't take 5 minutes. I'll just take a minute to, first of all, thank you, Mike. Nice meeting you, Zach and Rick. And it's just good to hear like-minded people from around the United States. Like I said, we need to work together. We're all in the same boat. And to the extent that we can help each other, we should. If that means just donating $5, $10 online, then please go online to my website, www.brianhill.com, and donate. If you can't donate, and you can tweet or Facebook our message out, please do so, because we gotta work together and to take back the Senate and hopefully take over the White House. But the key is we're not going to get anywhere by working against each other. That's what Congress is doing. They're working against each other. It's amazing what you can do if you work together. And we have a lot of people supporting us from around the United States, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. I got a great staff, Chip Jones, my communications director. We've got four-tier strategies is helping out with our Facebook and social media, and they're doing an outstanding job, and I want to recognize them publicly for the outstanding job that they're doing. What you're doing makes a difference. I don't care how small you think it is. What you're doing makes a hell of a difference. Like you were talking about earlier, Mike, with Herman Cain, pushing Herman Cain, pushing Rick Santorum to frontier status. He went from being nowhere to being the front runner, one of the two front runners for president, based on the work that you guys are doing. So it really does make a difference, and we can have a significant impact by working together and pooling our resources, and moving all in the same direction. And I believe, God willing, we're going to take over the Senate and reverse the direction
and get this ship back sailing towards that shining city upon the hill that we left a long time ago. So I thank you. God bless you all.
Amen. Amen, Brian. And we're going to get this ship upright. And if you can, stick around for the closing. I'd like for you to hear my closing. I think it'll be of interest to you.
Sure.
And I pledge to you my support, sir. And I'll email Chip when we get done and see what I can do to help you, okay?
Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Zach, go ahead.
Yeah, just to reiterate, appreciate the opportunity to speak today. As we travel down this road to restore our country, we have to ask ourselves those fundamental questions: is what are our beliefs? And to get there, I'd encourage people to go and read the Constitution, because it's not about what we believe is the right thing or the wrong thing to do, because our judgment is clouded at times because of our compassion and wanting to help people. But what we have to do is we have to look at issues through the prism of the Constitution, because the Constitution is what gives the limited powers to the federal government. We can help our brother, sure, but is that the will of the federal government? No. And those are the conversations that we have to start having again, is what is the role of the federal government? Well, it's defined in the Constitution. So I would encourage people to really educate themselves so that they can help educate their friends and family, because once you understand and grasp what the original intent of the Constitution is, you will become even more incentivize to get the right people in Congress, because you will see that each time that Congress raises their budget, our personal budget decreases. And not only that, but we have a problem with the Federal Reserve, and it is the hidden tax, which nobody is talking about. As money is being printed and the Federal Reserve is buying those notes, we are seeing inflation upon inflation, and what that is a tax, an unseen tax that we are all experiencing. If the government took of your $1,000, if they took 180 of that and that left you $820, you would be upset. But that's what's happening, because that $1,000 today will only buy $820 to $860 worth of goods. It's the hidden tax. So how can you help our campaign out in the state of Tennessee? Very simple. If you've been blessed by the Almighty God and you have financial means, I encourage you to go to ZachForSenate.com and click the donate tab and donate what you can. I know it's hard times, and if people are struggling, Facebook, Twittering, talking to your friends and family, just increasing the awareness of all the candidates, not just myself, but all the candidates, because to restore our country, we need everybody working together, as Brian just talked about, because Benjamin Franklin said, we must all hang together, otherwise we will most assuredly hang separately. So in order to get our country back, we have to all hang together, and I welcome your support and appreciate it.
Well, Zach, thank you so much. And, you know, listen, to both you and Brian, you both are still hot, okay? Again, that is ZachForSenate.com and BrianKHill.com. Brian is running for Senate in Connecticut. Zach is running for Senate in Tennessee. Folks, if you believe in conservatism, if you believe in the cause of liberty, then you're going to do what you can. I don't care what state you're from. You're going to do what you can to help. We've got to take over the Senate, folks. Let's just be truthful. For God's sakes, let's just be truthful. We've got to take the Senate. We've got to maintain the House, and we need the White House. Zach and Brian are the men that we need to put in from Connecticut, and that we need to put in from Tennessee, along with Ted Cruz from Texas. Look, Texas isn't going Democrat. It ain't going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen in Tennessee. I don't know. I don't know Tennessee politics that well. Brian, maybe you can tell me real quickly. where do we stand with getting a Republican into Connecticut?
If we nominate myself, we have a good chance. I honestly believe I'll have an easier time winning the general election than I will winning a Republican primary.
There you go, folks. We have got to take the Senate. We need good men. We need men like Zach and Rick who have been on the battlefield, who have fought in the cause of liberty, who are conservatives that will go to Washington and do the bidding not just for their states, but for the entire country. Folks, I can't urge you enough. If you can't put in some money, let's tweet for these gentlemen. Let's Facebook. We're all message pushers. Let's push this message. I want to thank both of these gentlemen for being on my show today. This is a great honor. Rick, I want to thank you for joining us today. Danny, I got to close up, my brother. God has blessed me today. And I would just, I want to read something that I've written a long time ago, but today I can find no better reason to read it than today. Xenophon, I think in his Institution of Cyrus somewhere, mentions that one of his heroes had come to the conclusion that he had two souls, one good and one bad, which predominated alternately. When the good one had ascendancy, his actions were all good and benevolent. When the evil principles prevailed, his actions were all vicious and detrimental. If ever a man had two souls, I think our president, Barack Obama, has, for his conduct is clearly prompted by two opposing and governing principles, as that of the Persian prince. In 2008, Barack Obama ran for the Democrats' nomination for his party and ultimately became the president of the United States. He ran on a pledge and a promise of hope and change, a promise of transparency, a promise to fix all the ills in a bipartisan manner, all of those things that are killing our country. Yet all his promises have been failures because of a lack of character. These two gentlemen that we've had on today, they don't have a lack of character. He failed because he never believed in the promises that he made. These two gentlemen, they believe in what they say. He failed because he's an ideologue that feels America is inherently wrong. These two gentlemen, while they might be ideologues in the cause of conservatism, they believe that America is right. That what we do is right. Obama, his ambition to fundamentally change America, well, we now know the results of that. To fundamentally change America meant to take us from the republic that we are, from the democratic republic that we are, and move us to the left. Election 2012 is a defining period in America's history. How will history write of what became of the United States of America? Will the recorded remonstrance be that when it was known that the national treasury was without a dime, that the resources of the country were exhausted, public credit was prostrate, and in short, the nation was bankrupt both financially and morally, that confidence was destroyed in both political parties and that with the executive and legislative branches, and that we were surrounded with inveterate and placeable enemies upon our borders, and that insurrection and insubordination to the laws stalked abroad through the land, and that the American people were without work and unemployment ran rampant, and that democracy or the dependency upon the government for assistance had become the norm. In a word, we were reduced to the very lowest point of national degradation, and by way of Greece and other Western European nations, we saw our fate. We sat idly by. Is that how history will record our fate? Or shall future historians record that people like Zach Poskovich, and Brian Hill rose from the ranks of common Americans, people of moral compass and principled ideas that worked and pulled themselves up by their bootstraps in life with solid, sound, conservative principles at the gloomiest period of our country's history, in the darkest hour of our nation's travail, to deliver us from thraldom and bondage, that these men of mighty Herculean strength and principle delivered our country from the fangs of the political python that has enveloped us within her folds. Shall it be told to prosperity that at such a time and under such circumstances that men like Brian and Zach became the name of benefactor to our country and saved us from this hydra-headed monster that we have been left in easy prey and threatens to devour our country in whole. I pray heaven in all its mercy that the latter of the two histories is what my descendants will read. I thank you all. I thank Brian Hill from Connecticut, and I thank Zach Poskovich from Tennessee for joining us today. I thank my brother Danny Schaus from Kentucky and my brother from Florida, Rick Burlow. I thank my buddy Teresa Bresky for helping me out and lining these gentlemen up, and my partner, who I miss today, who's out doing God's work in Cincinnati, Ohio, with a conservative PAC, Becca Lower. I thank you all for joining, for giving me a little time today, for giving these gentlemen a little of your time today. Folks, liberty and tyranny will always be at war. And it's only us that who are going to defeat tyranny. I want to end my show today with a dedication song to Brian K. Hill of Connecticut and Zach Poskovich of Tennessee. It's an old song, but it'll make you cry. I know it will me. It's called The Boxer.
I am just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I have squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies and chance, still the man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. When I left my home and my family, I was no more than a boy in the company of strangers, in the quiet of the railway station, letting us get. Laying low, seeking out the poorer quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know. By the light, asking only workmen's wages, I come looking for a job, but I get no offers. Just to come home from the wars on 7th Avenue. I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome I took some comfort there. La 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 la. Thank you. a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame, I am leaving, I am leaving.